Hello, friends. It's Jim Nance, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to Beyond the Clubhouse, a podcast hosted by my friend Garrett Johnston. He is a testament to one of the great things about this sport, the friendships that come from playing or even just talking about the game. And you're going to meet some of the characters that Garrett has gotten to know from this past decade plus that he's been covering the sport. You're going to hear from players, caddies, members of the media. You're going to get the storytelling, the golf news, the players' swing tips, and a whole lot of laughs. It's coming your way with this edition of Beyond the Clubhouse. Here's Garrett.
All right, what's going on, guys? We got Peter Malnati on the podcast this week. 36 years old. We want to talk about delayed gratification. This guy's going to play in his first Masters at Augusta National. When I saw him win at Valspar, and I saw the emotion, he picked up his son Hatcher there in that live interview on Golf Channel and NBC with Kira Dixon. That was just such a cool moment. Obviously, the raw emotion, and we saw his presser afterwards. He got the bucket hat, and you know, just such a relatable guy. I've always really liked Peter Malnati, and I'd seen him at different events in D.C. when it was a Quicken Loans National Tigers event, TPC Potomac, and I saw him over at Congressional when it was there, and I saw him even before that. I met him actually at PGA West in the desert, I think 2016. He was at the back end of the driving range with Stuart Appleby. You want to talk about young up-and-comer with one of the old grizzled vets playing together, I should say, hitting balls together. They both missed the cut. It was a Saturday morning. I kind of just chilled back there, watched those guys, met them a little bit, and he was just very, I mean, yeah, he missed the cut, but he was in a good mood, and he was chatty, and he's always been kind of very chatty, and he even said that before we started this podcast. He's like, Garrett, however much time you said you're going to do, we're going to go over, because that's just how I roll. I just chat away, and he's just a very energetic guy and easy to root for. So we're going to see him this week in the Masters, coming up here, but just so much that's baked into him getting into his first Masters. I actually asked Scott Van Pelt and the whole ESPN crew on the media call this week about the Masters, previewing the Masters, said, what do you guys think of Peter Malnati? And so many good answers. Obviously, Scott loves SVP, loved the delayed gratification side of it, and the fact that he has not gone to Augusta. He has stayed away from it because he knows he wants to earn his invite, and that is what is such a big part of this, that he got there. He was asked as a tour pro to go by a member, didn't go. He was asked as a kid to go with family or friends, didn't go, and now his time is here. So here's Peter Malnati. We're going to get into that whole side of things. I asked him specifically about that and many other things, his parents coming out, his support, the people who have been with him, the investors who didn't ask for anything in return, people who were his bosses way back in the day when he just first started working on a golf course, his wife, what this means to his wife to be able to give this to Alicia a week like the Masters, his kids, the par 3 contest, you name it. Everything is here, and Peter is awesome in this chat. So here's Peter Malnati on Beyond the Clubhouse. All right, joined by Peter Malnati. We know him as most recently the winner of the Valspar Championship with his family all around. That was such a great moment. A moment really resonated with a lot of us. His son Hatcher holding him in his arms for that winner's interview. But Peter, so much has happened. So many emotions are processed. But how are you feeling right now?
You know, it's all good, man. It's all good things. It's been a whirlwind. It's been a real whirlwind. You know, it's really cool. All the things, obviously the most present thing right now is prepping for this little tournament next week that I've never played before. And just all that goes with that. But it's just, you know, it has been, I would say, you know, everyone says I felt all the emotions. Well, I haven't felt all the emotions. I've just felt all the good ones. It's been a crazy 10 days. There's been a lot of overwhelm, but even the overwhelm has been just all the good stuff flooding. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned, you know, the moment with your son Hatcher and that he was in your arms for that 2-minute interview that was live. It's a moment in your life that will never, it's always going to be there. And you and Hatcher can relive it for years to come. Like, how do you feel about that when you think about that moment for you guys? What does it mean?
You know, I mean, it means so much. That was that moment when, and we've got this amazing still photo, and I'd love to give credit to who took it, but I don't know yet. We have this amazing still photo that's just zoomed in on him running out onto the green with his purple cape on. But that moment of having you know, I dreamed of that moment of having my family meet me on the last green of a tournament before I had a family. I dreamed of that moment. And, you know, when I think about, you ask, like, what does that moment mean to me? When I was there doing an interview with my son in my arms, my wife and my younger son right there, my mother was there, which is incredible. It was, I mean, obviously anyone who saw it could see that I was emotional. It was an emotional moment for me. But even thinking about it now, I just think about how much, you know, like even going back to when I was a kid, like my mom and dad, and I had two older sisters, they used to sacrifice their weekends to take me to golf tournaments. They used to, my mom and dad would, you know, spend a lot of their money to get me to golf tournaments. You know, now as an adult, my wife has sacrificed her, like, any chance she has to have a professional life, which when I was playing mini tours, she was grinding to get her PhD. Like, it's not like she was, you know, her dream wasn't to support me playing on the PGA tour. Like, she was running, and any chance that she's had to have a professional life, she sort of sacrificed to support my dream. You know, my two boys, they don't really know yet. Hatcher is starting to, he's really starting to learn, like, you know, sometimes daddy leaves and he stays home, and like that's just, but you know, they sacrifice time with their daddy so that I can go live my dream. And obviously it's great. It's a wonderful profession. I'm able to provide for my family, but like that moment when he was in my arms and I was doing that winner's interview, that was what I was thinking about, was just all the sacrifices that the people around me have made for me to be able to have that moment. And to get to share it with them was, as anyone who was watching could see, completely overwhelming for me.
Yeah. And I would just imagine like the delayed gratification, you know, like for me, like I've been in golf journalism for, you know, 12, 15 years. I've never been offered a full-time job in it. I've had to grind. I call it the mini tours. I've been on the mini tours for 15 years. And just the delay gratification, when big stories happen or interviews happen, like it means so much to me. It really, you know, it's emotional. And for you, like, you know, going 9 years without winning, like how does that feel to validate it with the Valspar win?
Yeah. You know, I talked to a lot of different, I talked to a lot of different groups of people about golf and my career. Simply, you know, there's a few clubs here and a few golf clubs here in town that have like given me honorary memberships. And so I'll go and I'll, you know, do a meet and greet or sit down with some of their members and thank them. So that's one group I talked to. I'm really fortunate. I live in Knoxville, Tennessee, where the University of Tennessee is. They have one of the best practice facilities I've ever seen for golf, for their golf team. So I'm able to kind of piggyback off their facility and use them, but I get to mentor some of the kids who are playing golf there. So I tell them, whenever I'm telling people about, you know, my career, my profession, I always say, you know, I have lofty goals and lofty expectations. I want to be a top 50 player in the world. I want to start every year knowing that I'm playing in the major championships and all the big events that I want to play. You know, now we've got this new signature event model. Like, it's a goal of mine to know that I'm playing in all those. But I always also tell people, like, at the end of the day, though, if I really want to get really honest with them, my number one goal each and every year is to have my job again the next year. That's it. Like, and that is not an easy goal to meet. Like, the PGA Tour is so incredibly competitive. So, you know, for me to go 9 years without winning, that was 9 years of, you know, each and every single tournament was about keeping my job for the next year. And, you know, now, like, it's not that I'm going to relax or anything like that, because I obviously now have the opportunity to play some of those big events that I've always wanted to play. But I do have some security in my back pocket, and that's an amazing feeling. So during that interim 9 years between when I won the Sanderson Farms Championship back in the fall of 2015 and, you know, a week ago winning the Valspar Championship, like, I always knew that I was working toward that moment. You never know for sure if you're going to get there, but I always knew I was working toward it. And, you know, to have it come, you know, all come to real life right in front of me on, you know, a pretty magical, you know, week there in Tampa, Florida, and a very magical Sunday. It's just, I don't know. I can't really describe it right now. It's still, even 10 days later, I can't really describe it. It's amazing.
Well, I listened to your podcast with Billy Hurley, Living It Up podcast. Those guys do a great job. And you mentioned there that your best friend, one of your best friends, teaches high school kids and he changes their lives and he makes a lot less than you ever will. And you're empathetic of that. You're mentoring kids as well. I'm just curious, like for fans out there that don't know Peter Malnati that well, what is your purpose? Like, I love hearing the giving back here, but what is your purpose, man? Like, how do you define it?
Yeah, my purpose starts with my family now, of course. Like I'm trying, you know, my wife and I together, I'm trying to be my number one job in life is to be, you know, a supportive, loving husband to my wife. And, you know, a very, very close second is, you know, to be a dad who's raising two boys to be kind, empathetic, you know, young boys who are going to turn into, you know, young adults who are then going to turn into adults who hopefully are going to impact the world in a positive way. And so I think that's, you know, that is, you know, at the end of the day, I have the most awesome job in the world because I play a game that I love. But the whole point of all of it is to use the platform to make the world, you know, the world that I influence a little bit better. And, you know, the most powerful way, you know, it's sometimes if you read headlines and pay attention to the news, like the world can be a pretty, you know, a daunting place. But I feel like the most powerful way that my wife and I can impact the world, is to raise two boys who grew up to be, you know, empathetic, caring, kind human beings in the world. And so that's our number one purpose right now. And then you obviously we're able to touch a slightly broader community than that, than just our family. And so we try to have those same goals. And but yeah, that's, you know, this world, if we can share, you know, some kindness and make the world a little bit of a, you know, just a more open place, like that's our goal. And that has to start small. It has to start with the people you touch immediately. So that's what we try to do.
A person that's obviously huge for you and your career. And you obviously were emotional talking about Alicia, your wife. I'm curious with the Masters week, how happy are you for her to be a part of that? And, you know, all the hours she's put in, University of Missouri, 80-hour weeks, like giving me a sense of how happy you are for her to experience that.
Amazingly happy. And, you know, it's kind of funny. We're sitting here, I keep saying this. I've said this on repeat. I want next week to feel as close to like just a normal tournament as it can. Cause, you know, I don't want to put it on a pedestal. I don't want to make it anything more than it is. I want to approach. And her response has pretty consistently been, when you're inside the ropes, it can be a normal tournament.
Right.
And I like that answer because she's right. Like, let's be realistic. You know, most of the tournaments I get to play now, I've played for the last 10 years, which is an amazing thing to say. This will be, you know, I've actually never been on the grounds at Augusta. So it'll be my first time, it'll be my family's first time. And you know, we are so pumped for all that comes with that. Like I think we're looking forward to Wednesday as much as anything about the week, you know, the par three contest and having the family involved in that. And, you know, it's going to be so great.
Well, let's get into never being on the grounds yet. I know that, you know, Scott Van Pelt mentioned that on a conference call here a couple of days ago. He had read the Brently Romine story on Golf Channel, and you'd mentioned it was from your presser talking about that. Like, give us a sense of like why you've put Augusta off, you know, until you earned it.
Yeah, it's that simple. I mean, I really like, I always had, you know, whether or not it ever happened is obviously now it's going to happen. So it's not even a question anymore. It is going to happen. It's happening in a few days. I wanted the sense of accomplishment of, you know, being on the grounds because I was playing in the tournament. And I think at some point in my life, you know, if I'd gone another decade and, you know, had maintained a good level of success to stay on the PGA Tour, but never a level that got me into the Masters, I think I surely would have broken down and gone to see the tournament, right? Like, right. I think so. I don't think I'm that stubborn, but I always did. I wanted to have this experience. I wanted my first time to be there. And, you know, if I had won a tournament last year after the Masters, I would have made my first trip to Augusta sometime before the week of the tournament. But just through the timing and the way things worked, I literally will be making my first. I'm going to get there a little earlier than I would for a usual tournament, but I mean, not by much, like an extra day.
Saturday so, or
Yeah, we're going to travel Saturday. And then depending on how the boys do with travel, no, it shouldn't be a hard trip from Knoxville, Tennessee. But depending on how the boys do the travel, I may go to the course and register on Saturday, or I may make the first trip Sunday morning down Magnolia Lane.
Tell me about that for a minute. We've seen all these Instagram videos of guys, first time pros, first time going down Magnolia Lane. Tell me your game plan. We got a song in the background. Who's going to be in the car? What's going on here?
Yeah. I don't even haven't planned it. It'll be, we honestly don't even know for sure our travel plans to Augusta. It should be a pretty short, easy drive, but we're taking quite a few people. Like, we're taking a lot of family. So me and Hatcher, who, you know, he got famous at Valspar when I was holding him up, and he was the guy. Hatcher and I, we may fly to Augusta, even though it's a pretty short drive from Knoxville, just to free up some car space. So he and I may get there early, get in the courtesy car, tour town a little bit. And I don't know. I'll talk to my family and see, but maybe he and I will just do a ceremonial first drive down Magnolia Lane together. That'd be kind of cool. No one who watched the interview where I was, crying like a, whatever, like hopefully like a strong, empathetic man. But
a good dad, a good dad.
Yeah. But, no one will believe this, but I'm not that much of a sentimental kind of guy. Like I don't have any of my, I've made a, this is like a humble brag, but I don't mean it to be. I've made 3 hole in ones on tour. I don't have any of the hole in one balls. I give them away. Like, I'm not that like sentimental about that kind of stuff. So even though it will be incredibly special, I haven't orchestrated the trip down Magnolia Lane. The first one, we'll just take it as it comes, and it'll be sweet. I know that.
Right. How old would you have been the first time you would have like thought about wanting to go? I mean, I'd love to go to Augusta, be it, you know, get, play it.
So are you asking how old was I the first time I had this goal, or how old?
Yeah. When did the goal of going to the Masters come about?
It's interesting. I think there's a distinction between our dreams and our goals, for sure. And so the dream of going to the Masters, like, that was simple. That way, I think I got my very first job. I was parking carts at Dandridge Golf Course, where I grew up, on the weekends. And I was probably 13. My dad had to drive me to work. I definitely couldn't drive to work. As it got late in the day, I'd still be on the clock, but I'd sneak out to the putting green and putt. All those, 6 and 8 footers I'd be putting on the putting green, they were, tied to the lead on the last hole at the Masters. And, the dream has existed for a long time. But the goal, the goal of actually playing in Augusta, I think, when I got my first tour card back in the fall of 2013, yeah. At that point it seemed realistic. It was like, a great season or one great week from happening then. And so then I say it turned into more of a goal. But even at that point, it's taken me, I'm in my 10th season. So nine full years on tour to realize the goal of getting there.
Mm. You mentioned, and I think about the other people, the support, right? You've talked about investors, people invested your career back when you were younger with no expectation of return. You're going to try to get all the 8 tickets a day. Give us a sense, you got a spreadsheet, give us a sense of how this is all happening to take care of your people.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So we're spoiled on tour, like normal tour events. I say normal tour events are incredible. All of them, like every single one, they're all incredible. So normal is not the right word to use, but our, the tour events that we play, the other 40 weeks a year that we're not playing, a US Open or the Masters, and all my family who wants to come to the tournament is credentialed. So they have a permanent credential. They don't need tickets. That is not the case at the Masters. The Masters, right. My family needs to use tickets. So like 8 a day seems really, really generous when you think about, everyone out there who's trying to get a ticket and they're costing, $2,000, $3,000. Like 8 a day seems incredible. But like when it's like, yeah, but every family member that wants one needs one of those out of my 8.
Big time.
But it's been, I'll brag on, I've got so many people that support me. I shouldn't name anyone's name because I'm definitely going to leave some people out. But so my first job was at a place called Dandridge Golf Course. And the guy who was the manager of that course growing up, who was always, he was this tough Polish Chicago, like he had retired to Tennessee and was running this little you know, public golf course. We had three nines, the red, the white, and the blue nine. And I'd walk in the clubhouse with my dad when I was like nine. And I'd say, you know, his name was Greg Kukla, and I called him Kookster. And I'd say, Kookster, which nine should we go to? And he'd say, go to the green nine. It's like, we don't have a green nine here. And he goes, exactly. But he like, I joke sometimes that he raised me, because like, my parents taught me all the good stuff in life, and Kookster taught me all the important stuff in life.
Stuff you're going to use.
So Kookster's coming. He's coming for practice rounds. That's what he wants to do. He's coming. One of my original investors, who he was a member at the course where I worked, my second job, a place called the Country Club in Morristown, Tennessee. He, you know, I created this whole investment like thing. People could, you know, buy a share of my career. And then I would, you know, pay him back a percentage. And by 3 years into my mini tour career, I was living with my parents. So I didn't have any expenses, but I was turning like a little profit. And so after 3 years, when I went to write checks to the investors to you know, thank them and give back, he like looked at me like I was crazy and said, I don't want your money. I just want Masters tickets. And so his name is Don Rogers, and Don is, he's still a really dear friend and an awesome supporter. So he's getting his Masters tickets that he asked for. That would have been 2012 when I was trying to pay back investors. And he said, no, I want Masters tickets. So 12 years later, he's getting them. And that's really exciting. So yeah, that process, it's not something I have to do for, you know, the majority of the weeks I've played on tour. I don't have to have a spreadsheet to figure out who's getting what tickets, but, if it's a burden, it's a burden I'll gladly undertake each year.
Yeah. Well, I love that story right there. I always love when it's credit where credit's due. Like anybody in our life, any mentors, any people that were influential. I called a sports journalist buddy of mine last night, got some advice on the Rory McIlroy podcast that I had. Yeah. Anyway, like I'm always calling back to mentors. And beyond that, your parents, I'm thinking about how special is this for them to experience Augusta National?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I actually got to see, you know, my dad, he worked, I mean, he's, you know, he was a perfect picture of, you know, is I guess maybe a generation ago, you know, my parents kind of subscribed to pretty traditional gender roles, but my dad was the breadwinner. He was he worked his job, worked so hard, came home on weekends, coached baseball, coached my sister's soccer teams, you know, did all the little projects that needed doing around the house. And then Monday morning went right back to where he would, like, yeah, that was my dad. And now he's retired from work, but he's a terrible retired person. He can't not do something. So, you know, he worked the same job at Bush Brothers Baked Beans. He worked for 30 something years there. And then he retired, and I'm thinking, you know, dad, you got a little pension. You were awesome. You did an amazing job. Like, come travel to some golf tournaments. Now he bought a 23-acre farm and got some cows and built a barn. And now he's running. So my dad is funny. He watches golf from home, nervous as can be, but he's like, nah, I gotta stay home. Someone's got to take care of the farm. I gotta stay home. And that's how he's always been. So I'm not sure. I'm still trying to drag him out, but my mom's the opposite. She won't miss a shot. And that's really fitting, because when I was a kid, my mom drove me to junior tournaments. Like, it's amazing. You know, as a kid, you kind of take it for granted, but my mom, like, she would drive me to junior. She paid for the hotel. She paid for dinner. She paid the entry fees. And I'm finally getting to pay her back a little bit for all that. But every now and then she'll still pay for dinner when we're out and when we're somewhere on the road, and Alicia and I are like, put that away, like, stop.
Come on.
But
we got this.
But it's so fun. And, you know, to be able to share that with them, and I'm really close. I have two older sisters, who are both amazing. One of my older sisters was a letter winner track athlete at Duke University, and she went on to get a doctor of physical therapy. She and I were always, we had sport in common growing up, and we were really close. And so, like, she's watched me, and she's a physical therapist. She's actually helped me with my health at times too. And she's watched my career and the struggles, and also, you know, the breakthroughs and the amazing. And so, like, for her, I'm really thrilled. And, you know, it's just, this is all, it's going to be so cool.
Well, I think about you not being a super sentimental guy, but still the pro shop, all the gift shop. I talked to Adam Shank, and he said his first master coming up, he said he's going to get a dog collar for his dog at home. It's golden retriever. That's a priority. The first thing he's going to get. For you, what are the first things you're going to get? What are you looking forward to there?
Man, I haven't even thought about that. Like, the last thing
we need, the Masters.
The last thing we need in this house are more clothes for anybody. But I'll be thinking about all the people who, you know, aren't able to make the, like, some people are getting a ticket to the Masters, and all the people who deserve one but just can't because there's not enough. I'll be thinking about those people when I'm in there, and you know, there'll be hoodies and hats and t-shirts and all that stuff, and it'll be it'll be really, really cool to be able to share my first a piece of my first Masters experience with so many people who helped make it a reality.
Well, and the course itself, like what parts of the course are you looking forward to kind of mapping out? But I mean, obviously Amen Corner is so famous, but what kind of excites you there?
Yeah. I'm not a big, I like to keep things as simple as possible. I don't like to overthink, golf courses. And so sometimes I actually think a less is more approach is good for me when it comes to prep, because like if I go and map every inch of a golf course in my yards book and have detailed notes about this or detailed notes about that, I just overthink and overtry. But going to Augusta for the first time, I actually did something that I normally would never do. I listened to a nearly 2-hour podcast that Jeff Ogilvy did. I'm not sure when he did. It seems like it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and they were re-airing it. But he just kind of walked through all 18 holes at Augusta, and you know, he's kind of a golf architecture geek, and he was I feel like I've already played my first practice round having listened to that, because he was talking about, you know, how certain hole locations require certain angles and stuff like that. And the thing that I took from listening to that podcast was the fact that, you know, most golf courses you play, like a traditional golf course, you think of it as having some birdie holes and then some harder holes. And he was talking about how at Augusta, it's not so much, there are, you know, the par fives are there. And he said, but at Augusta, there are birdie hole locations and then hole locations where you have to be really cautious. And that idea really resonated with me. So, you know, I think the easy example to kind of think about is, and this is just from watching on TV and listening to Jeff talk, but like fans can probably picture the green on 16. He said, you know, the green on 16, you've got two hole locations that make that a birdie hole. And you've got two hole locations that make that, you know, a hole where you really need to play a wise shot and be very content to get out of there with a 2-putt par. And I think that makes a lot of sense, you know, how you can kind of have, you know, a hole that one day might be a hole where you're playing offense and a hole where the next day you might be playing defense simply based on the hole location. But that really excites me about going there because, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've added tremendous amount of firepower to my game. I hit it, you know, I can hit it. I'm not a long hitter by any means, but I'm at least average now. And I think, you know, I can hit it plenty far off the tee. And, you know, I've always had really nice touch on and around the greens. That's been a strength for me. And so I feel like, you know, with those two elements, you know, being able to get it out there off the tee and then having good touch around the greens, you know, why couldn't I go there and have a really good week? I'm so excited to go check out the golf course and do well on it.
If favorite Masters you've watched over the years, any that really resonate with you?
I can't believe how easy this is for me to answer, but it is. In 2019, I went back to being a teenager. I just watched Tiger win the Masters, and I was a teenager again, just sitting there like, wow, in awe of, you know, in 97, I wasn't a golfer yet. In 97, the 97 Masters, I would have been not quite to my 10th birthday. My family was not a real golf family. So I did not watch Tiger win that Masters. Right. I always say this, and it's true. The tournament that turned me into a golfer was the 2000 US Open at Pebble Beach. That's when I became a golfer. I watched Tiger win that US Open, not win, but just dominate that US Open. And that was like when I said, oh my gosh, that's cool. I want to do that. And even though the 97 Masters were so historic, I didn't watch it. But in 19, you know, I was how old? I mean, that was just 5 years ago.
31.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess we were still 7 or 8 months away. I actually remember that Alicia was sick because she had terrible pregnancy. She was sick, pregnant with Hatcher. But I watched every shot on Sunday, and I think what wasn't there bad weather. They went in threesomes, and I think did split tees. I watched every shot and was just a kid again, just like totally. And you know, the crazy part is I knew all the other guys too then. And it's like, I should have been rooting for Fran because he's my brother and I love him and he's great. But when Tiger was in, it was like, go Tiger, let's go. And like, it was so crazy to see. Cause you know, in the 2000, at the 2000 US Open, and then for 7, 8, 9, 10 years after that, I was just in awe of his talent. That's it, you know? And 19, it was like, I was in awe of his resilience. I was in awe of his strategy. I was in awe of, you know, the patience and expertise with which he played that back nine. Like it was amazing. It was still an equal sense of awe, but it was an awe of different things. So I watching him win again, the 2019 Masters was something that I will remember. Like, that was crazy.
And just to be able to experience that Wednesday before the par three contest, you alluded to it with Hatcher, your son, Dash, Alicia, I'm sure she'll be around there. Like, how cool is that going to be?
I cannot wait for that. I have a feeling, you know, obviously I hope the tournament produces a lot of highlights for me, and I hope I will be thinking about and remembering the tournament for years to come. I think I will remember my first par three contest regardless of what happens in the tournament. I think it's going to be absolutely amazing. And I think the age that Hatcher and Dash are right now, like Dash, you know, he's up, he's walking. He's been walking now for about 2 months, and he's in that fun stage where his steps still look awkward, but he doesn't care. You know, he's 16 months old. He doesn't care that he looks awkward. And so he's up and going. And I think, you know, he'll be walking around. You know, Hatcher will have a little golf bag, probably going to take his little wedge and hopefully hit a chip shot or something out there for me. Alicia will be, she'll be my main caddy. And you know, we'll have some family there with cameras and it's going to be so good.
Yeah. We've talked about your support. Your wife will wrap up here. For you though, like the overall, what does it mean? You get this chance to go to Augusta and play in your profession. This has happened.
You know what it means, Garrett? Like it really means to me that like, not that I've made it, because I made it a long time ago. You know, I made it to the PGA Tour and won on the PGA Tour 9 years ago. So like, making it has happened, but it means that this job that I so appreciate and still so love, I love this job. I dreamed of doing it when I was a teenager. I still love it as much today, 10 years in, as I did, you know, at my first PGA Tour grad. What this means is, you know, I get to take one step up. I'm up to a new level. You know, I'm going to play in the Masters. I'm going to play in the PGA Championship in another month. I'm going to play all the signature events for the rest of this year. You know, I'm on the precipice of guaranteeing myself, you know, starts in the signature events for next year. I've already earned my start. My favorite week of golf that I've ever experienced so far was Maui in 2016. I've earned the right to go back to Maui, and now I'll have my boys to go with me. It just means that a job that I really, really appreciate and really love is going to be mine for a good bit longer now, for sure. That's wrapped up. And that's what it means to me. Like, you know, I'm sure seeing, you know, standing on the first tee on Thursday morning at the Masters, I can say all I want about how it's just another golf tournament. It's not going to be. I'm going to feel some pretty cool emotions. But if I zoom out and just look at it from a big picture, this means that I get to have my dream job at a slightly even higher level than I had it 3 weeks ago for the foreseeable future. And that's pretty darn cool for me and my family.
Peter, really appreciate this chat. You're a lot to look forward to, man. Really happy for you coming ahead here.
Awesome. Garrett, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, my thanks to Peter Balnati for jumping on the pod. I also got to give a shout out to his manager, Derek Boland. And Derek and I go way back. We met at Riviera back in 2011, and he was
doing some work there for FCA and helping out their organization, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and now he's doing some player management and doing a good job. So great to catch up with Derek there, and glad that it worked out for schedules for everybody to have a conversation there for me to talk with Peter. Hope you guys enjoyed that. There's just so much with baked into Augusta for the first Masters for Peter Malnati. I mean, obviously, he knows what it means. He knows the drive down Magnolia Lane. Doesn't have a game plan. I love it. He doesn't have a game plan for what memorabilia. That, I think, said so much about who he is. When I asked about memorabilia, he turned that into, you know what? This is about other people. I don't even think about the people that didn't make the trip, that wanted to make the trip. Like, if you talk about, you know, people who are thinking of others, I said this when Grayson Murray's podcast came out with Gary Williams, a couple months ago after Grayson got into the Masters and had that huge win and life-changing moment back in January at Sony. It's amazing when you hear players at the high level, right, of golf, and they're so compelled to talk about other people. And I think in that example with Peter saying, you know what, talk about merchandise, that's great, but let's think about the people that should be here and my other friends and people that deserve to be here. And hey, I mean, that says a lot about Peter. It says a lot about his priorities and understanding all the people that went into where he's at in his career right now. This is the real deal. It's Peter and what he's thinking about. So anyway, hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll catch up soon here on Beyond the Clubhouse.